by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Sometimes being defeated or plundered by a superior, powerful agent, a living entity loses all his possessions. He then becomes very morose, and lamenting their loss, he sometimes becomes unconscious. Sometimes he imagines a great palatial city in which he desires to live happily with his family members and riches. He thinks himself fully satisfied if this is possible, but such so-called happiness continues only for a moment. Purport. The word Gandharvapuram is very significant in this verse. Sometimes in the forest, a very big castle appears, and this is called a castle in the air. Actually, this castle does not exist anywhere but in one's own imagination. This is called Gandharvapura. In the material forest, the conditioned soul sometimes contemplates great castles and skyscrapers, and he wastes his energy for such things, hoping to live in them very peacefully with his family forever. However, the laws of nature do not allow this. When he enters such castles, he temporarily thinks that he is very happy, even though his happiness is impermanent. His happiness may last for a few years, but because the owner of the castle has to leave the castle at the time of death, everything is eventually lost. This is the way of worldly transactions. Such happiness is described by Vidyapati as the happiness one derives from seeing a drop of water in the desert. The desert is heated by scorching sunshine, and if we want to reduce the desert temperature, we need huge amounts of water, millions and millions of gallons. What effect will one drop have? Water certainly has value, but one drop of water cannot reduce the heat of the desert. In this material world, everyone is ambitious, but the heat is very scorching. What will an imaginary castle in the air do to help? Srila Vidyapati has therefore sung Tatala Sarkati Vadibindusam Sutamita Ramani Samaje. The happiness of family life, friends, and society is compared to a drop of water in the scorching desert. The entire material world is busy trying to attain happiness because happiness is the prerogative of the living being. Unfortunately, due to falling in contact with the material world, the living entity simply struggles for existence. Even if one becomes happy for a while, a very powerful enemy may plunder everything. There are many instances in which big businessmen suddenly become paupers in the street. Yet the nature of material existence is such that foolish people are attracted to these transactions and they forget the real business of self-realization. Om Ajnana Timirandasa Jananjana Salakaya Chaksula Midatam Jina Tasmai Sigurave Namaha Si Chaitana Manubhistam Stapitam Jina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapandantikam Vanchakapata Rupesh Dati Vashindu Vihi Pacha Patitanam Pavanivyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. There are Duratmas and there are Mahatmas. Great-minded persons and cripple-minded persons. Mahatma means broad-minded. And a Duratma is a miserly fellow, Kripana, who does not know the real value of human life and wastes it. No better than that, nothing like that of an animal. The senses are always dictating to us, making their demands. A Mahatma, a sadhu, is one who knows that I must control my senses. Otherwise, my senses will victimize me. Not only the senses, but the mind, which is the center of the senses, is constantly giving us difficulty. This is because the senses and mind are in contact with the material energy. If we learn to refrain from material sense objects, then gradually the mind will become peaceful. At the present moment, our minds are always agitated with lust, anger, and greed. This is because we have allowed our senses to go out of control, to contact so many material sense objects. And we have to suffer the result. Dhyayato vishayantamsa sangas peshu sanjayate sangat sanjayate kama kama krodha vijayate. We are full of calm, full of material desires. Desires for profit, desires for material opulences, and therefore dharma, artha, kama. We do economic development. We see the whole world is running on economic development. They're always scheming, making plans, not based on any higher motivation. At first they say capitalism, then they say communism, then they say capitalism, then they say many countries, then they say make one country, then again there will be many countries. So many different shifts in policies, all for the purpose of increasing material sense gratification. But the funny thing is that despite all of their efforts, no one is satisfied. The whole material world is full of dissatisfied people, and then they lash out, as we see in these riots in Los Angeles. They become so angry because their desires are not being fulfilled. And the politicians, the biggest cheaters of all, take advantage of the people and promise them, you elect me and I will fulfill your desires. What power does anyone have to fulfill anybody else's desire? That is simply a false promise. Nobody can fulfill their desires, because the nature of sense enjoyment is that it is unlimited in its desire. It is like an unending, ever-increasing fire, material sense gratification. And the more you pour fuel on the fire, the bigger it blazes. So the net result of all of their desire for sense gratification and their efforts is that they will have greater desires, and a greater vacuum will be created. A greater hunger, a greater thirst will be created. Prabhupada has quoted here Vidyapati. Actually, he wrote me a letter and he quoted the same point from Vidyapati many years ago. One of the first letters I received from Prabhupada, he quoted this Vidyapati. At that time, I did not know it was Vidyapati. But he's a great poet, Vaishnava poet. So this Vidyapati has sung that the heart is like a desert. Now, in a desert, there is all dryness and heat. And yet, when you are moving about in the desert, then you're always hoping for some relief from the heat, for some liquid to quench your thirst. So in the distance you may see a great oasis. This is like the materialists. They are hoping, they are seeing what is Prabhupada called here Gandharva Puram. Gandharva means the Gandharvas are heavenly persons. Pur means a city. So it is a heavenly city. In the forest, there is no such thing as a heavenly city. In the forest of material enjoyment, we may dream of a heavenly city. We may dream of an empire. And just like in a desert, a person may see or dream there is a beautiful oasis of water with nice ducks and swans and, you know, chakravaka birds and lotuses and cool water. But when they finally work so hard to get to that point, what do they find? It is just as burning. Just like the materialists, they work so hard to accumulate wealth, then they become rich, and what do they find? More problems, more anxieties. So this is the trick of Maya. And a dharatma, a cripple-minded person, is always under the illusion of the material energy, who is bewildered. Maya dyakshena prakrite suyate sachadachanam etunanena konteya jagat viparivartate. They cannot understand that behind this Maya there is a great meaning or purpose. Behind this material illusory energy is a lesson to be learned, but unfortunately, they don't learn this lesson. And we also would not have learned this lesson were it not for the intervention of a very merciful personality. Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas and any devotee who is a preacher of Krishna consciousness is so merciful, because if it is not for the opportunity to meet a devotee, then how will anyone be able to understand what is the purpose of all of this material suffering? And as a result, they will go through life with no value at all. It is one thing to suffer, to make mistakes and learn from them. But then if one only suffers and makes mistakes and learns nothing, then what a great loss. So everyone has got enough experience of material life to know it is miserable. But at least we have the lessons which Srila Prabhupada's books have taught us, that there is a reason why we are being whipped and punished by Maya. It is to make us understand that this material world is not our home, that these castles in the sky are illusions, that all of these dreams which people are chasing after of material sense gratification and followers and sex enjoyment, this is simply a big illusion. And it is arranged by the material energy. It has no actual substance. The material energy is dead matter, just like this material body. It is dead matter. But Maya is so expert that she can take this dead matter, and it is filthy dead matter. Stool, urine, pus, blood, bones. She can make this ugly mess, you see, of matter into a very nice shape. And so we become so bewildered that by touching another person in that shape, we become thrilled. Oh, how wonderful. But actually, it is a bag of stool and pus and urine and bones. So just see how the mind has become bewildered. That if you touch stool, you immediately feel contaminated. You want to take a bath. If a person passes stool, he leaves that place. No one lives in the toilet. Everybody just closes the door and gets out as soon as possible. And yet, this body is nothing but a big toilet. Prabhupada said it is simply a urinal. And yet we are thinking it is wonderful. You see, and people walk around, you see them strutting about on the streets. Aren't I a beautiful toilet? They're saying, you know, just see me. I smell sweet with my French perfume. I have my latest cosmetics to decorate my body with. My hair is tinted a very beautiful shade of orange or blue or whatever color that, you know, is in fashion. And they move about. And one person saying, yes, you are so beautiful, and I'm also very good looking, don't you think? You see? And then we will get married, and we will have, you know, other little children, and they will think that and this goes on like this. And this is all the powerful arrangement of Maya. And amidst all of this illusion, you know, comes the Vaishnava soldiers, the Sankirtan men, you know, just like warriors that come in the midst. You can read the big battle scenes, and the demons are throwing so many mystic, you know, weapons down. You can read how Dhruva Maharaj was fighting, and the demons were creating all of these heavy materialistic weapons, you know, and Dhruva Maharaj was undaunted. He was just fighting, and he was just pushing away all of these mystic weapons and fighting and killing off the enemy. So the Sankirtan devotee does not become bewildered by all this type of illusory potency of the mystic Maya because of his superior intelligence. He knows what this is. And he doesn't allow himself to become enamored by material illusion. He doesn't dream of happiness in this material world, because there is no happiness in this material world. There's no happiness where you have a body made of stool and urine. There's no possibility of happiness. There is no happiness where death is surrounding us at every moment, where time is ticking away. It's like everybody has got a watch. Of course, now the watches don't make any noise. But anyway, they used to tick away, and you could see your life is ticking away. Right? Just like when you pour some water inside a sink, right? And then you have a plug, and you pull out the plug, and gradually it all just goes down the drain. So our life is like that. It's just all accumulated, and gradually it's just down the drain, and it's finished. And all that's left is a little spark, the spirit soul, with so many impressions. And whatever those impressions are, you get your new shape, your new body. So, otherwise, we are pure spark, the spirit soul. And whatever impressions that spark may have, that will be the type of shape you get. So we want to change those impressions, which make up our consciousness, from illusory, worldly identification with the body, man, woman, black, white, young, old, animal, human. We want to change that identity. Sarvu padi vinir muktam tat paratvena nirmalam rishikesha rishikenam sevanam bhaktir uchate. By performing devotional service to Krishna, we want to gradually remove these false impressions and understand, I am Krishna's servant. I am not this body. And that impression is natural to the soul. It is the original identity of the soul. At the present moment, we don't know who we are. So it takes a sadhu to first of all show us what is illusion and what is reality. And then it takes the process of bhakti for you to understand who you really are. At the present moment, we do not know who we are. We know only, I am servant of Krishna. But that is a general identity, just like saying, I am Swiss. If you say, who are you, and I am Swiss, that is only a general identification. But what is your name? Who are your parents? Where do you live? And what do you do? Then we will know more detail about who you are. So at the present moment, we only know generally, I am spirit soul, aham brahmasmi. But there is so much more to know. So that knowledge is called self-realization. And it is the result of bhakti yoga. By process of bhakti yoga, we will gradually come to understand our true identity in relationship to Krishna. This is called sambandha and abhidheya and prayojana. These are the three aspects of transcendental realization. To first of all, know my relationship with Krishna. That I am not this body, that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, I am his servant. Then that process which awakens our real identity is called abhideya. All of the different aspects, worshipping a deity, going on in sankirtan, serving the devotees, visiting the holy dham, so many different aspects. And prayojana means the final goal. What is that final goal? To become the lover of Krishna and Srimati Radharani and all the residents of Vrindavan. So it is a long way towards that goal, but the path has been made easy by the previous acharyas. They have shown us by their example, they have shown us by their words, and their instructions are contained in Prabhupada's purports. Srila Prabhupada has summarized very nicely all of the valuable instructions of the previous acharyas. So, this Jad Bharat, very unusual person. You can see, in his previous life, he was Bharat Maharaj, a great king. And he had reached this very, very high stage. It is said that he had reached the stage of bhava bhakti, ecstatic love for the Lord, which is practically on the stage of prema. And yet, Jad Bharat made a classic mistake out of compassion. It's something like a Sankirtan devotee who talks on the street to someone who seems to be interested, and out of compassion he starts to spend more and more and more time. And before he knows it, that person turns out to be what? Who knows? Some pseudo-Christian or some attractive woman. And out of compassion, he's trying to deliver this person. He forgets about the fact that he's out there to distribute at least 200 or 300 books that day. And he spends hour after hour talking and talking with this person. And, you know, becomes allured and enamored and gives up his business of Sankirtan. So Jad Bharat, he gave up his business. He was sitting and meditating, and he heard the sound of a great animal, ferocious animal, and a deer jumping over the river, and a baby deer coming out of the womb, pregnant deer, gave birth, and the little baby deer was going to be drowned. And he thought, except for me, who can save this deer? This is a very difficult situation. What would you do if you saw this? It is difficult, isn't it? What should he have done? Should he have allowed the deer to drown? Or should he have picked the baby deer out of the water? But having done this, who would have fed the baby deer? What should Jad Bharat have done in this? What should Bharat Maharaj have done in this circumstance? It is not such an easy thing to imagine what he should have done. In any case, we know he should not have done what he did. That much we can say. Rather than supplying the answer, at least we can say that the result, phalena parichite, judge something by the result. The result was he became so much enamored by that baby deer that he gave up his bhakti, his devotion, and he started to do service to the deer, and then he died, and he took birth as a deer. But still, his devotional law of activities were never lost. He got the benefit of all that he had done, and as a deer, he could still remember. I remember that I was a devotee. I remember that I was practicing Krishna consciousness, and I got deviated. So let me go to live with the devotees. And by living with the devotees, he waited, and finally he gave up his deer's body, and he took birth as Jad Bharat. And this time, he did not mix with society. One who mixes with society, a satsanga tyag, a Vaishnava achar, is not a Vaishnava. Because a Vaishnava is understood that he does not mix intimately with society. Because society's business is different than ours. Society's business is the business of animals. What is that? Material sense enjoyment. So we cannot mix intimately with mundane society. We should understand. We should never become enthralled by these Gandharva Purams. And actually, all of these buildings, all of these cities, are like Gandharva Purams. They're all dreams of people, dreams for material happiness. The only reason we are living here, don't think we are living on this Bergstrasse because it is such a wonderful place to live. Actually, it is an illusion to think like that. This whole city is a creation of the materialists for material enjoyment. We have taken back from the possession of Maya what belongs to Krishna. One building we have taken. And we have planted ourselves in the middle of this big Maya's kingdom only to do battle, only to dispel the illusion to as many people as possible. This is a big illusion. Don't believe in it. Get out of the rat race. People are simply in a rat race, trying to acquire as much as they can, enjoy while they can. They don't even think that I'm going to have to suffer so much in hell for all of this sinful life. I'm going to have to suffer in the future. They don't think like this. So devotees don't become bewildered. Just like Jad Bharat, he did not become bewildered. He made certain. He didn't mix. He acted dumb. Just like sometimes people see us, and they also think, what's wrong with you? Why don't you get a job? Why are you acting as if you have no interest in material life? Actually, devotees don't interact. They don't, for example, go out and vote in elections. They don't buy so many karmi products in the shops. They try as far as possible not to get dependent and entangled in the material society. That is what they want us to do. Become one of them. Then they'll be able to continue to dream on, and no one will disturb their sleep. They want everybody to sleep. So sometimes we also act like we're sleeping, but actually we are not sleeping. Sometimes we may behave like they do, just like we may go out, right, in some normal clothing as they do. We may live on Bergstrasse as they do. We may do so many things as they do, but our purpose is totally different. We're not here as enjoyers, we're here as servants. We're living in this house simply as servants of the deity. It is the deity's home. And we are living like the servants, not as the enjoyers. And when we go out on the street, we still remain the servants, never the master, never the enjoyer. We should always understand within the heart of all living entities is Krishna. And next to the Krishna in the heart is the individual soul. And these people, the soul, are crying, suffering on account of forgetfulness of Krishna. And only by waking them up, the Sankirtan devotees are so merciful. What chance do these people have? Just like what chance did we have were it not for our spiritual master and Vaishnavas who came to deliver us? So how kind are the Sankirtan devotees? Many of these people are so impious they would never have any opportunity to get in touch with Krishna. But the devotees, causeless mercy of the devotees, causeless mercy, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood is audharya, magnanimous, giving freely, distributing freely, not caring what is the person's qualification. They don't care. They don't think anything like this. They just think, you need Krishna. You're a spirit soul. My guru has told me to go out and give this mercy to you. I'm giving the mercy of Guru and Krishna to you. They're so kind, the devotees. And a person gets an opportunity, takes a book, gives a donation, and begins their spiritual life. And if they're very fortunate, they may read something. And if they're still more fortunate, they may come and associate with devotees. So, we should understand then that these palatial cities in which people live happily with their family members and riches, they will all be destroyed very quickly. Just like earthquake may come and everything is shaken and all the things collapse and fall into the ground. So when time will do this to everything. There's nothing in this material world that will withstand the force of time. Nothing. So reality is distinguished from illusion. Reality means that which remains, that which endures. And illusion is that which is temporary. So let us see. The body is temporary. The soul is permanent. So the soul is real and the body is an illusion. Devotional service brings lasting, permanent results. So it is real. Material sense gratification is temporary. So it's an illusion. So in this way, we should be able to analyze what is real from what is illusory. And we should not live in illusion. Now psychiatry is such a popular thing. But the psychiatrists are the biggest fools of all. They are the number one fools. Because they have no idea at all about what is illusion. They're sitting there and the patient is saying, oh, and I have this problem, and they're saying, yes, well, what you need is a better illusion. They don't say it's an illusion, but that's what they're recommending. Their recommendation is a bigger illusion. They don't know anything but illusions. They don't have the slightest idea about what is reality, the spiritual world, the soul within the body. They don't know these things. So even the people who are dealing with subtle science, like psychiatrists, they're as much an illusion as the gross mudhas pound away on the rocks. In fact, if anything, those persons are more real. They're more realists. Because the more and more you deal with the subtle energy, the more an illusion you become. The more entangled you become, more bewildered you become. At least a mudha, some foolish worker who's, you know, breaking rocks, he knows this material world stinks. It's a rotten, lousy place to live. The psychiatrist who lives on Bergstrasse, he's like, oh no, it's pretty good. Your problem is that you're breaking rocks. If you get rich like me, you know, then you'll see how good it is. You'll see what real life is. But there, we see that the more wealthy people become, the more educated they become, the more bewildered they become. It becomes more difficult to distribute books to them practically, because they have such an illusion about their own identity. I'm very important. So in order to distribute books to them, you have to say, dear sir, you are very important, and that's why you should get this book. This book is for very important people. We have to say so many things. I saw Prabhupada give a lecture in Bombay, and he was saying that you are all the most pious persons. You are so pious. You are so intelligent. And therefore, I am begging you, he said, with folded hands, with straw between my teeth, please do not neglect the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Practically, we have to do that. I was saying the other day, I had to make a life member once in India. The man was so much bewildered. Sometimes a Sankirtan devotee will have to do anything to get the job done. So this man was drunk, and he was so hot. And he told me that he said that it's so hot here, but I have a very good cure for heat. He said, you take this limca, you know, this drink limca, the soda pop drink in India. He said, take limca and pour it on your head. He said, this will cool you off. So, you know, we were trying to, you know, just deal with him because he was drunk. He was a big he had a big movie theater. So he said, I want to become your member, but first of all, you must do this. So then we have to do that. Pouring the limp on our head, you know, and then he signed the check. So the Sankirtan devotees have to do these things, right? Sometimes we have to do so many crazy things. By one means or another, they should take the book, because we know that when they get the book, so a devotee is very, very one-pointed, and he has no false pride. He is humble, and he will do anything to give Krishna consciousness to another person. His only ambition is like that. Somehow I want to see people take the Krishna consciousness. He doesn't have personal desires, personal false ego. Actually, preaching is so good because it does destroy the false ego. You get out there, if you're in the right humble mood, as a servant of your guru, the servant of the deities, the servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Krishna will work through you. As long as you're very humble and you're fixed on your business out there, Krishna will do wonderful things with you. But as soon as we think, I'm one of these people out there, if you start to identify with the fallen conditioned souls, then you become conditioned. And then you can't become a good Sankirtan devotee. So, this Sankirtan is a training. It is the training for going back to Godhead. It is the training for learning how to identify purely with the Panchatattva, with Lord Chaitanya and his associates. It is the greatest training of all. You can be in a temple, you can be in India, and you can completely forget Krishna. But when you go out on Sankirtan, if you forget Krishna for a moment, you get burned immediately. Here in the temple, you can be, you know, you could let your mind start wandering after so many material thoughts. And then you can say, anyway, I'm protected. But when you go out on the street and you start doing that kind of thing with your mind, you're finished. You get smashed. Immediately, there's burning reaction. Therefore, it is actually the greatest mercy to do Sankirtan, because it is just like the front line. When you go out, you know, on the front line in an army, in a battle, in a big war, and if for one moment you let down your defense, you get shot, you get a bullet in your head. One little mistake, you get a bullet on your head. Isn't it like that? So it is like that. That is the front line going out with books. And therefore we see that the devotees who can do this, they become very serious. Those who are good book distributors are also good devotees, serious devotees. There is a direct parallel between the two. Sankirtan Yajna is the means for preparing our consciousness for going back to Godhead, for making us fixed and one-pointed in our determination. So this is a marathon time. Here it is almost always a marathon. Someone said to me, oh, you always come during the marathon. I said, well, that's because there is always a marathon here. In this zone, there is only marathon. I said, it's very hard to find the time to come when there's no marathon. So I always come here because I want to associate with all of the fixed up Sankirtan devotees so that when I go back to America, I will not become bewildered by the idea, you know, that there is some other way, isn't it, besides doing book distribution, something else will spread our movement. But we see practically that when books are distributed, everything goes nicely. The devotee's consciousness is nice, the temples get developed, people become Krishna conscious. We know this is a fact, and Prabhupada is pleased. So it is so nice that here that consciousness is so strong, and no one has ever lost that fixed determination, pure vision, of which Prabhupada always tried to direct us. We'll stop here. Does anyone have any questions or comments? Yes. Grihastha can avoid material society by being a brahmachari grihastha. A grihastha should understand the danger of family life. Prahlad Maharaj calls it andhakupam, a deep dark well. There is a well, and in that well there are crocodiles. And above the well some rope is being extended down, but this rope is being eaten by some kind of creatures that are gnawing away like a rat. The rope is being extended down, but the rat is eating the rope. So the householders who are trying to come out are holding onto the rope, but the rat is eating the rope. And above that are bees, very angry wasps. And they are also circling around the hand of the householder who is holding on to the rope. And above that, they're waiting on the top are tigers. So this is a very dangerous situation. How to come out of this predicament? It is a fact. It is very difficult. But what is very difficult, we see that Raghunath Das Goswami, he said that somehow or other I got out of this situation. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu pulled me out of this dangerous situation. My spiritual master pulled me out of this dangerous situation. And he prays to his guru, to Yadunandana Acharya, and to Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami, and to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that they saved me. So by the grace of Guru and grace of Gauranga, in other words, by full absorption in the preaching mission, then a householder can be protected. Prabhupada's strategy was not that one had to remain in any one particular ashram, but that whether one was a brahmachari or grihastha, that they give their entire energy for spreading the mission of Lord Chaitanya. So the real key will be to how much dedicated one is to for the spreading of Krishna consciousness. If one is, then there is no fear for the householder. A householder that is absorbed continuously in spreading Krishna consciousness, what danger is there for him? Where will there be danger? He doesn't forget his business at any moment. When he goes home at night, his wife is also fully engaged in Krishna service, so they're simply discussing the temple affairs and nothing more. When he does anything at all, his maintenance is simple, his children are being trained as devotees. He's absorbed in Sankirtan consciousness. Then there's no danger for that person. But if one simply maintains, if one works all day simply to maintain family life, then there's great danger. And we see that then they get absorbed. Just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had a disciple who used to give his entire paycheck to his Guru Maharaj. And his wife would come and Bhaktisiddhanta would give her some money to pay for the food. In other words, this person did not keep anything. He gave everything to his Guru. He thought that I'm still a brahmachari. So if a householder remains as loyal and dedicated to his spiritual master as he was when he's a brahmachari, then that person is safe. But if we start to think as a householder, now I have taken household life, I have some independent responsibilities apart from the preaching mission, then as much as you think that way, that much you're entangled. There should not be any change. The only thing is one should think, because I could not fully do without association with the opposite sex, Krishna has allowed me to get married. But other than that, everything else should remain the same. The consciousness should be totally absorbed in serving Guru and Krishna and spreading the Sankirtan movement. Then for such a household, it is not dangerous. And if you can't, then to whatever extent you cannot, to that extent you become entangled. Still, the power of Krishna consciousness is there, and gradually you'll become disentangled. But it is time-consuming, and there's always danger that one could fall down. Not such persons. My view is that there are some devotees who have mental problems, and actually they require professional help. But unless the psychiatrist is a devotee psychiatrist, it is the worst thing to go see such psychiatrists. Just like sometimes a person's body gets sick, so the temple president can't necessarily tell him how to get better, right? So he has to go to a doctor. But we have seen also that those who are devotee doctors are best, if they're qualified. So Sanatana Goswami said, we should not learn anything. We should not go to anyone for help who is not a devotee. So what we require is devotee psychiatrists. Then they can help. Psychiatry is a type of, it is a professional medical skill. There is some ability that they have in terms of dealing with patients. But if they're not devotees, then it is completely useless. It is worse than useless. It is dangerous. So to send devotees to material psychiatrists is like sending them to be killed, or sending them to a slaughterhouse. Just like Prabhupada, he didn't want to go to a hospital. He kept telling us, don't take me to a hospital. Don't let them take me away. Because he knew that they will make experiments. Most of the time in these hospitals, they make experiments. And they, half the time, they create more problems than they solve. But if someone is a devotee and a doctor, or a devotee and a psychiatrist, then that is very good. Then they can help the mentally disturbed devotees. Because some devotees have mental problems beyond the control, beyond the capacity of the guru or temple president to deal with. You understand? They're mentally ill. There are mentally ill devotees just like there are mentally ill karmis. And when it is such a serious problem that the normal process of devotional service is not sufficient, then it will be helpful if they can see a devotee psychiatrist. But if there is no devotee psychiatrist, then they should just tolerate and chant Hare Krishna. To send anyone to a karmi psychiatrist is the worst thing. Big, big mistake. If the psychiatrist is not a devotee, but at least must be very, very favorable to Krishna consciousness, must understand that Krishna consciousness is the actual reality, then that type of psychiatrist can be seen. Even though they're not a full devotee, but they should understand something about the process of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, they'll say that your problem is that you're chanting Hare Krishna. That is why you're crazy. Another question? Yes, bhakti yoga. Yes, so they should do those things. They should show us by their example. They should do that. Sit and do yoga all day. And that way they will stay busy while we are distributing our books. We keep them busy in the corner, standing on their head, pressing their nose, and we will do our business. I think that making devotees and spreading Krishna consciousness, it is not always under the laws of logic and reason. Just like it is not reasonable how a devotee can distribute 700 or 800 books in a day. It defies reason. In other words, something impossible has become possible. So similarly, the opposite may be. There's something that should be possible. The more books we distribute, the more devotees should be made. Doesn't always appear that way. But I have seen one thing, that it, some places, somewhere they're making a lot of devotees. Somewhere they're distributing a lot of books. Somewhere they're distributing a lot of prasadam. All of these things balance out. When it will again happen that the place where we distributed so many books will produce so many devotees, it is up to Lord Chaitanya. Prabhupada said that the book distribution is like planting so many seeds. So the seeds will sprout one day. Maybe it will take some severe circumstance or situation. Some intensive energy will have to be, you know, coming down on these people, and then they will become devotees. It is hard to say. But we see so many devotees have been made in Russia. In Eastern Europe, so many people joined very quickly, right? And for years, they were not so many joining as they are now. So it goes in shifts like that. So I think it is beyond our logic or reason. It is something to do with the spiritual energy, and it is something inconceivable. And we should not in any way think, therefore, the reason is because we should take up a different method than book distribution. It's because now we have distributed enough books, now we have to cultivate the people. That we should also do. Distributing the books. Book distribution itself will help people to become convinced. That is also one form of cultivation, giving them more books. So it's not that we say, now we have distributed so many books, so we better sit back and do more energy for cultivation. This is a material conception. It won't be that. That is not the fact, and we have not seen that to be a fact in countries where they tried this. All that we saw that happened is that the devotees lost their potency. Because the most potent devotees and the most potent temples are where book distribution is very strong. So if you cultivate people and they come into an atmosphere where there is no book distribution, then they don't surrender fully. And they don't dedicate themselves in the same way. So even if you argue that we have to do other programs to cultivate, we accept that. But one of the things of cultivation is to bring them to the temple. And if they get brought to the temple when you cultivate them, and all they see is people sitting around, you know, cultivating instead of distributing books, then they'll also start to cultivate. You know, what will happen? They'll never understand how to dedicate themselves fully. It is a mistake to think that we should slacken our efforts in book distribution. No, we can say, yes, cultivate people is very good. Find out those people who have gotten books, preach to them, cultivate them, but still we should go on distributing more books. Because another thing is that people may not read the books they got. And by getting a new book, now they may be finally ready, and they will read this book. You cannot say how it works. Well, Prabhupada didn't say, distribute a lot of books and then stop. He didn't say that. And, you know, just like we're distributing books here, and we are building Mayapur, so if we simply cultivate, how will we build Mayapur? And by building Mayapur, that's a powerful cultivation. When we build the big city of Mayapur, the beautiful temple, and the people who got books here that we start to cultivate and we bring them to Mayapur, they'll become very convinced. So these things are all connected. I don't think we should make this kind of wrong conception. We should be very, very clear in our minds. The main program should be book distribution. And all the programs will follow from that. Yes, cultivate. Yes, we will build Mayapur. All things will come from that. And the devotees will become purified at heart. There's no doubt that by the process of Sankirtan, the devotee's heart becomes the most fully cleansed. And if we can produce one or two pure devotees from this process of devotees going on in Sankirtan, if we produce some pure devotees, that will do the most to spread Krishna consciousness. We should think of that also, that the process of book distribution cleanses the heart. So when the hearts are cleansed and the devotees are there in this world, then the people who got the books, when they come in association with those pure-hearted devotees, they'll become affected. The only time we should stop distributing is if the body becomes too old to distribute. Then we become preachers. Then we can take up other processes of preaching, cultivating, etc. But until the body becomes too old, then let us go on. Another question? All right. Srila Prabhupada ki. Sankirtan Yajna ki. Transcendental book distribution ki. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bo.